Thing is Emerson versus Island County.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. My name is Justin Park. I'm counsel for Ken and Kelly Emerson in this matter, and we're here after the Emersons thought they were at the end of a long and tortured road to get a building permit for a small enclosed patio. They thought they were at the end of that road because in 2013 they entered into a settlement agreement with Island County that provided they would get their building permit if they met certain conditions, which they then met. However, Island County did not at the time issue that building permit. This action followed, and in a summary judgment motion by the city, the court dismissed four of the Emersons' claims, specifically for violation of RCW 6440, for unlawful takings, for fraud, and for violation of Section 1983 civil rights. And we're here today on our appeal of those dismissals. And I'll take each of those in order. With regard to RCW 6440 and that violation, the trial court's reasoning for that dismissal was that the Emersons had, quote, failed to exhaust administrative remedies, end quote. The problem with that analysis is that it presupposes two things. One, that the Emersons had the contractual ability to go back and make some kind of a claim to a hearing examiner in Island County, and two, that that remedy was in fact actually available to them. The Sabin case clearly spells out that this type of a violation regarding a settlement agreement can be the source of a 6440 violation. And the Smoke case lays out exemptions to this quote-unquote exhaustion requirement in situations that really do apply in this case. In this matter, there was no final appealable order. There was simply a settlement agreement. There was compliance with that agreement by the Emersons, and then the county did not follow through on issuing the building permit. There was never any final letter or order that was going to come out, and therefore there's no requirement that further administrative remedies be pursued. Moreover, those remedies were not even available to the Emersons because the contract itself, the settlement agreement itself, provides the remedy in the event of a default. And the venue for that action is specifically in the Superior Court. Indeed, you could imagine that had the Emersons tried to go back to the hearing examiner, that the county would be arguing you shouldn't be there because the contract calls for you to be in the Superior Court.
A possibility that the Emersons could have, if they, nothing was happening pursuant to the settlement agreement and they felt that they were wrong, could they start over in the administrative process? I mean, you say that they had to file an action, but why is that inconsistent with trying to get a permit?
It's certainly, if in a normal permitting process, when the permit would be denied, you would go to a hearing examiner situation, but we were well beyond that. We were many years.
You had withdrawn your appeal. I mean, looks to me like what the trial court was thinking is that you had a permit application going and you were headed for an appeal. In fact, you had filed one.
That's correct.
And you were going to exhaust your administrative remedies.
That's absolutely correct.
Then you withdrew that, so that changed your posture.
Absolutely, Your Honor. That's exactly what we are arguing, is that the settlement agreement, as settlement agreements do, replaced the permit application. Right? And therefore, the only way going forward to bring any action was to rely upon that settlement agreement, which said you've got to be in the Superior Court.
Well, why isn't that argument like trying to have your cake and eat it, too? I mean, in other words, you wanted to have both a settlement and a contract remedy, which normally people don't have, and you wanted to have your administrative remedy. Why is it unfair for the system to work in such a way that you elected to do this by a contract and you no longer had the permitting.
That's exactly the Emerson's permission or position, is that.
Your contract case, I take it, was moved out of the court, and you're mediating that or something?
Yeah, our arbitration is set for that, yeah.
Okay, so, I mean.
So that one is certainly still there, but the Sabin case says that RCW 6440 is a viable cause of action in a situation just like this when there is a settlement agreement.
Well, of course, the trial court distinguished that on the basis that in that case there had been.
And this was one of the errors, right? Because what's interesting to note is that in the Sabin case, that administrative appeal did not get completed before the trial court then decided the 6440 claim. So it couldn't have been an exhaustion issue in that case. And also, the Sabin case is distinguishable in that the settlement agreement in that case was simply a series of emails back and forth between the parties, did not contain, as this one did, a formal default and choice of venue clause that, as to what is going to happen in the future. With regard to the takings and fraud claims, the arguments here are actually very similar. The bases that the trial court used for deciding both of those claims were not found, not argued, not pled, not briefed in any way in this summary judgment motion. In regards to the takings issue, the judge analyzed this case as an as-applied takings claim, which we acknowledge, Emerson's acknowledge that is correct. However, the city moved on a facial takings claim, and so no briefing on the issue of as-applied takings was ever done, and therefore that decision is an error. Similarly, with the fraud claim, the court's basis was that there was no evidence of intent by the county to deny the permit when they entered into the settlement agreement. This was not a basis alleged in the summary judgment pleadings or in the argument by the county, and therefore it wasn't briefed. And so the Emersons ask that they get a chance to go back and have these issues properly heard. On the 1983 claim, the county argues that the Proprotnick and Lutheran daycare cases stand for the proposition that a county is only liable under 1983 when the Board of Commissioners acts. That's just not the case. The Director of Planning was properly authorized to make policy in this particular situation. He signed the settlement agreement. We have the valid facts showing compliance with that settlement agreement for the Emersons, and therefore the 1983 claim ought to survive. Thank you. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Mark Johnson. I'm here on behalf of Island County. We're asking the court to affirm the summary judgment, dismissing most but not all of the claims. And you'll note that really the one that survives the contract claim is really the fundamental issue here that the plaintiffs are alleging. They're saying we breached a settlement agreement. They still have that claim. That was not dismissed, so that's not before you. I want to address at the very outset the suggestion that somehow we did not make arguments at the trial court level and therefore we waived those arguments. For example, counsel says we didn't raise the issue of nine elements of fraud, which must be pled and proved by clear, cogent, and convincing evidence. Clerk's papers 81 through 83 provide an elaborate discussion of all of those elements and how at least five or six of them were not met. Counsel also says that we pled only a facial takings claim. There is nothing in our motion for summary judgment that references a facial claim. We asked that the court dismiss the takings claim in its entirety based on several grounds, including that no case ever, not only in Washington, but in the United States, had ever found a regulatory taking based on a permit requirement that there be a site inspection.
Well, let me ask you this about the takings claim. It's my understanding that when you move for summary judgment on that ground, that the response was, well, you moved for summary judgment on the basis of the United States Constitution, and this is actually a Washington Constitution claim, and that was the sole response.
That was absolutely right. It was four sentences long. They didn't say, wait a minute, we've got a facial claim here. Under the state constitution, here's what it is. What they said is the state constitution allows more liberality for a takings claim. They cited a case that had to do with a private taking, which has nothing to do with this, of course. And we pointed out in our reply brief, no, actually, the federal constitution and the state constitution provide similar remedies and requirements with respect to a regulatory taking by a government.
Why would we even reach the merits? I mean, why would we not just affirm dismissal on the basis of a failure of response in summary judgment?
I agree with you 100%, but it was raised in their materials and suggesting that somehow we had alleged a facial taking. We simply didn't. Now, with respect to 6440, it's important to remember that that statute provides a very limited remedy. It applies only when you've exhausted remedies and you've gotten to the highest decision maker in a local jurisdiction, and in this case would have been the Board of County Commissioners. And then it requires a 30-day time period within which to pursue that claim after the final decision is issued. So counsel may feel badly that he's got a contract claim only and not a 6440 claim, but you can't bootstrap a 6440 claim into a contract claim. They simply didn't exhaust remedies. They could have. Of course they could have asked again, will you please deny our application again so that we can pursue it, and they could have, but they didn't. And
this argument in response to that is, well, we couldn't because the settlement agreement said we had to go to Superior Court.
Well, yeah, with respect to claims under the contract, that's true. But either way, it's the same result. If, in fact, the contract foreclosed the 6440 claim, then it did. If it didn't, then they didn't pursue that remedy. So either way, they don't have that remedy available to them now, years later. With respect to the Sabin case, it's not on point. In Sabin, they did, in fact, appeal to the hearing examiner, and then they appealed the hearing examiner's decision to the Board of County Commissioners, and then they filed a timely 6440 action. None of that was done here. We've already talked about regulatory taking. The fraud claim, as I mentioned, we raised not only that the contract itself said that no representations were being made and no promises that a permit was to be issued. So that was the first ground. They waived that claim of fraud. But we also argued the nine elements, which must be shown by clear, cogent, and convincing evidence, and they must at least make a prima facie case as to each of those elements. And here they did not show a representation of existing fact. They didn't show a misrepresentation. They admitted there was no intentional misrepresentation. Ms. Emerson admitted in her deposition. Also, the elements of reliance and a right to rely were absent because they had acknowledged in the very contract that no representations were being made, and that the contract also said, by the way, that any wetland report submitted would have to strictly comply with the State Department of Ecology methodologies and standards for wetland reports. So we don't believe there was any breach of contract because we looked at the report and went, wait a minute, this isn't the way a wetland report is to be done. But we went ahead in good faith and showed it to the Department of Ecology. Hey, guys, if you say this wetland report satisfies your standards, then we'll go along with that. And they said, no, it doesn't. So we tried over and over again. Look, guys, just let someone from the county come on the property to do an inspection. Or if you don't like the county for political or personal reasons, let the state of Washington, they're the ones that promulgate wetland and critical areas regulations, let them come on. At no expense to you, just let us take a look. And for years, for their own personal or political reasons, they did not want any government employee on the property, notwithstanding the fact they'd started the construction without permits and knowing that permits were required. So the suggestion that somehow there was fraud or that there was a takings here is unsupportable. With respect to the 1983 claim, three grounds for dismissal of that. First, 1983 requires a final decision by the highest decision maker in the county, the authority for making those kinds of decisions, and it's not a planning department staff. It's either the hearing examiner, at least, or the Board of County Commissioners. You don't have an unconstitutional policy or custom based on mere decisions made by planning staff. So no unconstitutional policy, no vicarious liability for Section 1983. Secondly, there was no constitutionally protected property interest in a permit without inspections. And again, we pointed out no court in the country has ever said that it's a violation of due process to require an inspection. When I have my home built or addition to it, I have to allow government inspectors to come on and see what's been done. That includes critical areas if there's an issue about critical areas. Even Ms. Emerson admitted that that is standard. And you can't have a constitutionally protected property interest in mere procedures relative to a permit. Finally, even if they had received a final decision by the Board of County Commissioners, which they didn't, and even if they had a constitutionally protected property interest in a permit while refusing to allow an inspection, there was certainly no conduct by the county that was shocking to the contemporary conscience, which is the current standard announced by the U.S. Supreme Court and adopted by courts throughout the country for a substantive due process violation. So none of the elements required for a Section 1983 claim were present. The court.
I guess the way it presents itself, particularly in hindsight after many years, I mean, it looks like how did this whole thing get started? It seems like the county had something in its files that made somebody think
yes.
that there was a wetland.
Yes, there was a garage that was built years earlier, and when an inspector went out to look at the garage plans, he noted that there was a ravine on the property and that there it might be the source of wetlands. So they approved the garage, and this is in the record, they approved the garage but said, if you're going to do any other construction projects, please let us know because we're going to have someone come out here and do a critical areas inspection for that to find out if additional work implicates critical areas. So they decided to go ahead and start construction on this home addition without notifying the county, and it was only when a neighbor pointed it out that there was construction that then the county came by and said, hey, guys.
I'm curious, a slope is also a critical area, isn't it?
It can be, Your Honor, if there is an unstable slope. In this case, I don't believe that was the concern, although certainly there was a ravine there. I think the concern is that there was evidence of hydrology and wetland plants, and it was only when the county was finally allowed, in connection with a CR 34, whatever the where I said, can we please inspect the property? Finally, they not only allowed me to go on the property, but allowed this critical areas inspectors to come on. And it was at that point, they took some soil samples, they took some plants back to the lab, looked at it and said, this home addition is not going to implicate critical areas. Here, come.
And nothing in all these expert reviews that had preceded this were able to accomplish that same idea?
No, because they kept submitting reports from people who frankly don't like environmental regulations. We continually went to the Department of Ecology and said, this doesn't look right to us. What do you think? Ecology consistently said, that's not a wetland report that passes our standards. So we said, fine, let Ecology go on and take a look. They're the ones that know about these things. And they said, no way, we're not going to allow the state, we're not going to allow any government people on our property. And Mrs. Emerson was herself a commissioner at that time. Thank you.
I disagree with the characterization of the facts that was presented, with a lot of those facts that were presented, and I think they were done so in a light trying to make the Emersons look as bad as possible. For instance, the fact that Mr. Emerson started a very minor bit of construction on a Saturday and filed his permit application on the following Monday is not a situation where we have some kind of a major construction going on without a permit. That's just one example. And we're also not arguing the summary judgment motion over again. What we're looking at is what the trial court actually decided and whether or not there were errors there. With regard to this takings idea, the problem with the argument raised by the county is that the trial court's decision was an analysis of the third element of the as-applied test.
Well, but the question that I asked, I guess I'll pose to you as well. I mean, we're in the same position as the trial court. If the trial court made mistakes in the way she was thinking, that's one thing, but we don't really have to pay attention to it. What we look at is in the record and see what was submitted to the trial court.
Correct.
There was a motion for summary judgment that said that your takings claim is unsupported. And the only thing you came back with is that, well, we're under the Washington Constitution, and that's more protective.
And I'm not denying that.
That doesn't meet a burden on summary judgment to explain why you have a taking.
When their analysis is totally based on the facial takings claim. Whether they use the word or not, read the pleading. They are arguing that there is that there. About the as-applied takings, you're absolutely right, because the trial court raised it for the very first time at oral argument. And so there was never a reason to raise the as-applied.
Why not in your response brief say, you know what, this sounds like a facial takings analysis, and actually our claim is as-applied, and here it is. Here's why we have a takings claim, and it's an as-applied taking. I mean, who cares what the trial court said? You have a burden on summary judgment before it even gets to the trial court. You have to explain why you have a takings claim, what facts in the record support it, whether it's facial or as applied, so that you can show that you've got enough to go to trial. You can't go to trial with nothing.
Understood, Your Honor, but I guess the point that we made on appeal is simply that the basis that the trial court did use doesn't hold muster, and so we would like the opportunity, if we're going to decide it based on an as applied, if you're going to affirm that decision, we'd like the opportunity to be heard on the as-applied issue when it was never raised by anyone until oral argument. And I understand your point, but the point is that how could we brief as-applied if it wasn't raised by any party in any briefing?
You didn't brief any theory of a taking claim. You just said the state constitution gives us more rights.
True, but the trial court then decided didn't even decide it on that basis. She decided it on the basis of an as-applied takings claim.